views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And so far, no one from admin has come running in here yet, so I guess all the North Korean equipment is working. Mr. Nick Nugent, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Dave.
Wednesday's good when all the equipment is operating. You know, these new cold weather marks, minus four below, you never know about this stuff.
Well, with the amount of solar radiation in the aurora last night,
I know.
We don't know how far our signal's going.
Emily was all night long showing me photos from, like, Maine, Virginia, Two Rivers, Goldstream. I mean, it was just like, wow.
I saw this morning a couple of spots in northern Mexico.
Yeah.
That's got to be new, I mean, at least in my memory.
Yeah, I saw it all through her iPhone. You know, and today we have a really, one of my favorite people, good subjects, and you're doing Harry Carson's early years.
Yes. Going to come back explain in January with the later.
Explain who he was to Alaska.
Well, Harry was pretty well inseparable, but he was the first superintendent of Mount McKinley at that time, National Park. Mm-hmm. He had been a dog musher, was involved in, he was the first person on one of the successful climbs, the Sourdough Climb. And it just look at... what Harry did, and we'll find out that area, Kantishna, Denali.
He was the first, like, biographer of it.
Yeah, he was absolutely inseparable from that area, although he never actually seemed to have sought that. It just people sought Harry out to take charge because of the type of person he was.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the history of interior Alaska being the same or at least not missing something if Harry hadn't been here.
True. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The little pieces that he added to wherever he went.
Yeah.
Well, Harry was born on September 2nd, 1878 in Chicago. And again, he was very much the part of the history of Alaska, and he's inseparable from the history of Denali National Park. He was a fifth of seven children, four boys, three girls. His father, John Jacob, ran a feed store livery stable, was an immigrant from Holstein, which...
That's where my family's from, Holstein, you know, the name of the cow. We had to get it from the Danes a little bit there, you know, in about the 1860s, a little bit of war, and we got Holstein, yeah. So he's my brethren.
Well, that is...
Prussia got it. Germany didn't get it. Prussia got it. Germany wasn't created yet.
That is true. It's what eventually became part of the United Germany. But Harry himself...
I was waiting to pull that one on you.
Harry himself did not get along well with his father...
That's typical German.
Yep. And to aggravate his father, all of his life, Harry claimed to be a Dane.
Oh. 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 Horrible child. Horrible so, child.
Put the little gouge.
Yeah. Oh. They go both ways in that area.
Yes.
They do.
Well, his family was very typical of Germans in America at the time. And part of what that meant was primogeniture, the eldest son, would inherit all the family enterprises. And that, of course, gave Harry an outlook to look for opportunities elsewhere. He realized he'd either just be a hired hand or not have much of a future if he stayed with the family business. He did attend school full-time, which wasn't entirely common in those days. He worked the family business. John Jacob, his father, is remembered as a very disagreeable individual. He was a lifelong philanderer.
Wow.
He ran away with his mistress, leaving the family on their own. His oldest brother, John Henry, was fully as unpleasant as their father. And all in all, Chicago at that time was not the gay 90s for working class people like Harry and his brothers. There was a Pullman strike, which turned extremely violent. They had a lot of labor unrest with the nascent labor unions at the time. So
it was a strife-filled time frame in America, too.
Very much.
You had the depressions. Mm-hmm. You had expansion of the rail. You had industrialization with labor being very usurped, so.
There were at least four very large nationwide depressions between 1890 and about 1907, 1908.
Yeah, four.
Yeah. And,
we talk about the great one. They had four.
Yeah. And certainly money could dry up suddenly. Things mm-hmm. could just go haywire. And it wasn't an easy time to be earning a living.
Cap Lathrop went through it.
He did.
Yeah.
And I think you look at people like Harry and Cap, and we wonder, well, what made them what they are? It surely was
experience.
The world around them.
Experience, yeah.
Yeah. Well, starting in 1893 then, the economy in Chicago began to falter. Business was bad. These stresses, Harry's father was gone. These stresses became too much for Harry's brother, who by this time had a 17-year-old wife and two daughters. And I don't know how old the daughters were at this time, so Harry's brother apparently got married to a very young woman, and the stress of domestic life wasn't settling well. Harry and his brother began to quarrel very frequently until one day in 1895, a fight broke out, and it ended with John Henry being stabbed. And Harry just left. He didn't learn until 2 years later that his brother still lived. So for the next 2 years, Harry wandered the western U.S., the northern plains. He often worked cattle ranches simply for room and board. In June 1897, he drifted with friend Tom Cavanaugh. They were in Billings, Montana, when they met a rather famous name that you may have heard of when in some of our programs, Windy Bill. And Windy Bill was an Alaskan mail carrier, and he set the fever for Harry with tales of gold in the Klondike. So what Windy Bill was talking about would have been some of the very early, and maybe the very earliest part of the Klondike strike. Certainly not the loads of gold that came out a bit later. Well, they left for Seattle, realized they better get there quick. They had passage on a steamer called the Alki. It had been condemned and was awaiting being scrapped. They spent their last $40 on passage, and part of their fare was to work as freight handlers for $1 an hour. The trip to Skagway took 2 weeks. They chose to try the Chilkoot rather than the White Pass Trail. They saw the conditions and certainly heard about the loss of life amongst the horses that went up through that way, decided they'd rather take their chances on the Chilkoot. They accomplished their goal, though. They worked as packers, and some of what helped them was people gave up, even with packers, and they were able to pick some of the supplies that were left over. They packed to Lake Lindeman, and there they met two older Germans, and they built a boat together, established a partnership. They reached Lake Bennett, and that actually at that point was more than 75% of people coming north had been able to do, just to reach the lakes.
Wow.
So you can see Harry was a guy that he did have a stick to it when he got going. Well, so for our purposes, we could say that his time in the North began with his arrival in Dawson. He came November 1st, 1897.
Right when everything was shutting down.
Yeah. They were one of the last. The river was frozen the next morning. Harry and his partners were on one of the very last boats to make it in that year. At 19, he was one of the younger prospectors. Even at that early point, before the arrival of the masses of 1898, the newly arriving hopefuls found the creeks were already staked. The rapid staking was the result of an issue in the law which allowed you to file a power of attorney claims. So one person could only file a discovery claim and one other, but you could go ahead and file quite a few claims for friends and relatives if you had their power of attorney.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me here. We're talking about the exceptional Harry Carstens, his early years, and in January we'll do his later years.
We'll follow up with the foundation of the park.
We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center provides free, confidential pregnancy tests to any woman in need, but they offer so much more to women, men, and families. By participating in one-on-one parenting classes selected by you, you can take advantage of Earn While You Learn, earning valuable credit to spend on children's items and clothing in Maria's Boutique. The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center. Call 907-455-8255 or visit online findoutfree.com. Findoutfree.com.
Pump Up the Kids Adoptive Family is in full swing. Now's the time to adopt a family and pump up the kids this holiday season. Jingle your way to the radio station at 529 Fifth Avenue downtown Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to grab a gift tag or go big and adopt an entire family.
What's better than Black Friday or Cyber Monday? The Alaska Radio Auction, of course. At the radio station, our statewide holiday auction returns Friday, November 14th, starting at 8 a.m. with an entire week of nonstop auction action. It all kicks off with our auction showcase Friday morning at 8 a.m. on air and online at AlaskaRadioAuction.com. We'll still have all the instant items you know and love, with some new ones thrown in. Restaurants, spas, retail, recreation, tattoos, and more at 40 to 50% off the retail value. And the bidding doesn't stop when the microphones turn off. You'll have more ways to win and save with more items to bid on all week long. Big ticket and one-of items like auto starts, heating fuel, big boy toys, and more. Start the bidding and buying Friday, November 14th at 8 a.m. and follow the action all week long at AlaskaRadioAuction.com.
Fairbanks, Pike's Landing Bar and Restaurant is back open. After the fire, we are stronger than ever. We want to thank you for all your amazing support as we restored our dining room and remodeled our bathroom. Come experience the iconic Pike's Landing, a true Fairbanks landmark. Dine riverside with the reindeer. Enjoy great food, craft beers, and signature cocktails, and make new memories with family and friends. Pike's Landing Bar and Restaurant reopened, refreshed, and ready to welcome you back. Pike's Landing, where Fairbanks gathers and visitors are welcome.
KFAR weather.
Partly cloudy today with highs around 2 above. North winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 10 below. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 2 above. Partly cloudy skies Friday with daytime highs approaching 5 above. 6 above Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. David Prues in the studio here with Nick Nugent. How you doing, sir?
Very well.
So he's made it to the Klondike.
Yes. Right at literally...
November 1.
Yeah, this time of year, so right at the beginning of winter... I don't think...
Boy, is he going to do a lot of sluicing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So when they first got there, of course, Harry and Tom took off, and the two Germans went out to find other Germans they could talk to. They decided they needed to, of course, find shelter and see what the news was, and the news was not good. They talked with people who were there, and they found out all the areas with decent gold were already staked by those who had arrived in 1896 and earlier in 97. The more ominous talk was of a coming famine caused by the supply boats being caught in the freeze-up downriver. They're almost 300 miles downriver still. And lack of foresight by many of the commercial companies. The commercial companies seem to think that stocking up on all the hardware and whiskey they could was a it was a quick profit, but it wasn't exactly the best move they could have made.
They literally had to ration food in 1897 there. They really did over the winter.
That is one of the reasons why the Army helped build Fort Egbert and had a detachment at Circle City.
Yeah.
Was to keep from having food riots. Well, the main supplies that were in town were an unnecessary amount of hardware, which it was too late in the year to use, and alcohol. But worse yet, when they returned to their cache supplies, they found almost all of their food and everything but four blankets and the two Germans missing. And this is a point where Harry and I differ. I think I would have been hunting them down to my last breath.
Yes.
But, you know, Harry went, you know, they just pitched in, went to work. They camped in a small tent, found some day labor. At that point, flour was $125 a sack and butter, $10 a pound. So their earnings barely kept them fed. Also, no one would accept currency. All the currency they had, if they'd had $10,000 in paper money, it would have been accepted few places. Everybody wanted gold dust. Well, in December, clouded up. There was some relief to the weather. It had been as much as 67 below around Thanksgiving. They were able to get some relief. Harry staked some claims on Skookum Hill above Bonanza Creek, but he ended up unable to work those. So many people had rushed to that area and overstaked each other that took the Canadian officials 2 years before they sorted it out, and they actually closed all mining in the area until they could. So in mid-December, Harry stampeded to Henderson Creek near the Stuart River, about 70 miles from Dawson. There, he met Jack London, who was also mining at Henderson Creek. London was suffering from scurvy, and one of the legends that grows up about Karstens is that the main character in London's book, Burning Daylight, was modeled in part on Harry. Tom Walker, in his book, The 70-Mile Kid, elaborates on this. There was a prospector there named Elon Harnish, who was known by, he was seldom known by anything other than the nickname of Burning Daylight. Every day when he'd wake up, he'd yell, "We're burning daylight," to rouse up the other miners in his camp. So it looks like the answer was probably a writer's choice. A grandson of Harnish, in an interview, said that Harnish fit the character exactly, except for the physical description, which matched Harry. So quite possibly London did, as many writers of fiction do, he combined the two into a character that he was happy with. Well, Harry returned to Dawson, started to see less of Tom. They were working differing jobs. By late December, overland freight was beginning to arrive. Famine was diverted, though prices were still pretty terrible. So Harry and a Swede, Soren Sorensen.
That's a Swedish name.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. They decided in late February 1898 to head out to Mission Creek near present-day Eagle. Trip of 110 miles, the winds and fractured ice kept them mostly off the river, so they had to do some bushwhacking as they went.
You know, they're still mining on Eagle, up in Eagle Creek.
They are.
They are.
There's some areas up in there where they keep looking. Well, they met up with others at that point who had left Dawson due to all the issues in Dawson, Canadian mining laws also being one of it. So this area had first been mined in 1895, the year before the Klondike strike. It was almost forgotten, though, with the events of the Klondike. Harry, still a novice, filed claims on both Mission Creek and its tributary, American Creek. Well, the prospectors explored the area. Eventually, they reached the 70-mile river. Harry staked a pretty good bar claim there above the falls. Those types of claims have limited gold, usually. The advantage is you can usually pull out a lot of gold fairly quickly till you run out, and get to the goal that you need to keep going and to get a stake for a better piece of property. Well, they had an area there, though, where 10 years prior, a solar miner just with rocker and pan had taken $50 per day, $17 an ounce gold then. So mm-hmm. That's actually a pretty doggone return for the what he had. Well, Karstens and Sorensen headed for Dawson for supplies. They stopped in the new camp at the mouth of Mission Creek. Harry attended a miners' meeting where a new district mining recorder was elected. He helped lay out the town site of Eagle, which actually didn't have a name. It took some debate before it decided on Eagle City. After breakup, river traffic starting, there was rapid growth in Eagle. Soon there were warehouses, a municipal government, a newspaper. The population grew to 1,700 as many left Dawson, although 2 years later it had dropped down to 286. Harry was really known to voice the praises of the 70 mile all the time, and Lyman Burrell, who was an old-timer, started calling him the 70 mile kid. And that name stuck a lifetime, and even into his 70s, Harry was referred to by his friends as either kid or 70. There were also a lot of learning years at this point. The trip to Dawson from the 70 mile was nearly 300 miles round trip. Harry honed his bushcraft. He was never without a good axe, learned to build fires and shelter quickly. He also learned that caribou couldn't be depended on. They could be incredibly numerous, and by the next morning, you couldn't see one anywhere. He even found rabbits were cyclic and not a given dietary item. He did, though, in one of his interviews, relate that the old-timers had told him never kill a porcupine needlessly, as they were the only animal a starving man could run down and kill with a club. So never thought of a porcupine being an emergency ration.
Yeah.
Well, while in Dawson in April of 98, his best claims were voided with all of this turmoil that was going on, we talked about. He was, though, able to sell an option on his Henderson Creek claims and use the money to outfit himself for a year. Dawson had a breakup flood that year, which slowed down his leaving town. It was flooded from early May to June 5th. On the day the ice let go and the waters receded rather quickly, 3 days after that, the first of what became 7,000 boats that year arrived. Harry was able to buy a scow for next to nothing from a man who thought he would be shoveling up gold like gravel. And with that, Harry was back off for the 70 mile. He helped build a cabin, and he and several others did well until the inevitable deposits began to diminish. Harry decided to run a cut across the bar and did well enough. He didn't reap the amounts found in the Klondike, but he always felt like the gold was his on his claim, and he was protected by American mining law. Well, unknown to Harry, his oldest brother, John Henry, that he'd had the fight with, and another brother, George, had caught Klondike fever also. They set out to come by way of Valdez, avoiding Canadian law as long as possible, but unknown to them was the absolute hardship of the Valdez Passage, the huge ranges, the glaciers, the Copper River. In 1897-98, 3,500 people tried this route. Few ever made it over the summit. Many died on the glacier. Spring brought rains and snow. Floods came. It was nearly impossible to stay warm. It's estimated that only 10 people out of 3,500 made it all the way to the Klondike by that route.
Fairbanks, we're going to take our time. We're going to have some bumper music. Steve Miller Band, Jungle Love, which is minimally acceptable standard. I remember growing up with that. Then we're going to go into some Fox News, some state news, some commercials and weather, and we will be back.
¶¶ Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. 43 days now this government shutdown has lingered on, but now the House is expected to vote soon on a spending bill. The Senate has advanced to end it. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
House Democrats are here on the Capitol steps to reiterate our strong opposition to the spending bill because it fails to address the Republican health care crisis and it fails to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits.
Air traffic controllers want their money, though. They've been working without pay for over a month. Nick Daniels, president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, tells Fox News Channel the shutdown needs to end tonight.
Air traffic controllers share the exact same frustration as American flying public, that they should not be the pawns in any type of government shutdown.
Democrats want health subsidies extended. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
With just under a year before Alaskans head to the polls to pick a new governor, the field of candidates is already crowded. The Anchorage Daily News reports with 13 candidates, including a dozen Republicans and a single Democrat, and months to go until campaigning heats up in earnest. Some in the field have their sights set on the mid-February fundraising deadline, when each will be required to report to the state who had given significant sums to their campaigns. That could serve as a test for a handful of GOP candidates who largely share political views and have similar degrees of political experience to prove that they have the support and money needed to sustain what could become the most expensive gubernatorial campaign in state history. A large number of contributions can create social proof, said Matt Halala, a podiatrist who is running for governor and has also given contributions to numerous GOP candidates in the past. A too small number of contributors could be embarrassing, he said. President Trump has yet to weigh in on Alaska's race for governor. Neither has Governor Dunleavy.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Dearest Mother, I am writing you this letter from Brewster's. I recently was asked to go to a hockey game. It was told to me that before every game, there is a place where the spirit of camaraderie flows as freely as the ale. It is, of course, Brewster's. I decided to order one of my favorites, the award-winning handcrafted half-pound burger. Mother, I could eat one of those burgers for every meal and never tire of them. My new friends call going to Brewster's before the game pre-gaming. I will be doing this often. Your beloved son, Henry.
Is your business planning a big open house or maybe a grand opening? Well, you need to let folks know about it so that it's a successful event. And the best way to do that is with 50-50 Friday, right here on the radio station. It's 50-50 Friday, where your business and events are featured every hour, 24 hours a day, for an entire week on not one, but eight of the top radio stations in Fairbanks, reaching thousands and thousands of people. Plus a second week where we offer your business 100 radio ads to use as you wish. 50-50 Friday offers more than $11,000 in radio promotion to your business. So what does it cost? Only some gift certificates, which we offer on all of our websites on Friday at 50% off. So make your open house or grand opening the best ever with help from 50-50 Friday and the radio station. But hurry, as our popular 50-50 Friday event fills up fast. Call the radio station today and ask about promoting your business or event on 50-50 Friday. Only from the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center, Interior Alaska's choice for state-of-the-art eye care. Find relief with the most advanced dry eye center in the interior. See clearly and be free of your reading glasses and contacts for good. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center. Surgeons Dr. Laura Kearsley and Dr. Jason Crosby specialize in premium cataract surgery, LASIK laser vision correction, and treatment of eye disease. All insurance accepted. Schedule your consultation. Visit MountainViewEyes.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me here. It's the second Wednesday of the month, which means
we are talking about Alaska history.
That's right. If you have a question, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255, and today's history is on Harry Carstens.
Well, at this point, Harry ran into his brother George purely by accident, not knowing it was there. You know, you think about the vast open territory, and to find your brother would be kind of almost a shock. The older brother, John Henry, had returned to Chicago. He was with a party that got struck by an avalanche. He returned to Chicago, and when he got there, he almost never even went out of his house. He was totally broken by the experience. On the other hand, George went up to the 70 mile with Harry, filed a claim, and they worked it with some success. While they were there, news came of a strike in a place called Nome.
Oh, boy.
And the stories were too much like the tales of the early Klondike, and Harry was, you know, once burned, twice shy, as they say. They chose not to join with the 7,000 stampeders on the trail. George, though, abruptly decided to quit in late 1899, and Harry, again alone, returned to work. And it was tough life with the cold and the isolation being pretty well up on your list of problems. Well, near Harry was a prospector named George Curtis who had turned up in Eagle without even enough money to buy a trapping outfit. Curtis snapped up the chance to carry mail from Eagle to Tananaw Crossing, where another carrier would head on toward Valdez. Jim Fish of Valdez had the contract and divided the route, hired carriers for each section. Fish supplied Curtis with a dog team and startup money. Curtis, unfortunately, was not a stable individual. He took to drinking and gambled away all of his startup money and the dog team and sled, and he killed himself.
Oh, boy.
Eagle's postmaster needed a replacement. Karstens applied. His experience handling dogs up to this point amounted to 4 days with a 9-dog team on the Yukon. Harry admitted later that he had no idea what he was getting into, but it kind of set the pattern for the rest of his life. Alaska mail routes were a tough haul. Canada, the routes were suspended when it hit minus 45. Carriers in Alaska would be on very tight schedule and were awfully often traveling at minus 65 and colder.
You know, just that's true today, the differences between Alaskans and Canadians. Them wimpy Canucks.
Well, I think what the problem there was, the mounted police got tired of going out and recovering bodies.
Yeah. Our state troopers haven't.
Apparently not. Well, the hubs in both Canada and the U.S. were totally overwhelmed. The clerks and carriers were badgered constantly about mail arrival. Mail day was one of the only break in the rather miserable routine of many people. It was anticipated and sometimes dreaded, as the recipient never knew for sure what bad news may come with the good. It took 100 days or more for a letter to reach Dawson from even the Midwestern U.S. Mail carried by dog team at this point was limited to first class. Bulky items would just simply sit till steam navigation reopened. The carriers told their tales of extreme temperature, overflow, thin ice, raging storm, and many of these tales were punctuated with missing fingers, ears, and toes. Harry was on a particularly undeveloped route without any roadhouses enjoyed by later travelers. Many shared the tales of the hazard of the trail. Judge Wickersham told of a hat found on the ice being the only sign of a musher who had went through and vanished. Billy Mitchell, in his opening Alaska, related a tale about finding a sled with a frozen body slumped over the sled, mailbags in the sled, and a match stuck between his teeth, unable to summon the strength to strike it off a lighter. Well, Harry had to go on foot with 3 dogs on his first run because there was such a lack of snow. He pioneered and bushwhacked 90 miles of trail between Eagle and Tananaw Crossing. At Tananaw Crossing, he would meet the carrier coming north, exchange loads, then set out for Eagle. 5,000-foot peaks, poor trail. It was a very, very tough way to earn a living. Also, if you remember, the point furthest from oceans in all of Alaska is only 5 miles from Eagle. So there's no moderating maritime influence.
No, when there's not.
When it gets cold in that country, it gets cold and stays. One cold snap was so intense that Steel Creek froze solid overnight. Well, Harry would then change dogs and Eagle, mush on to Circle City, return from Circle City to Eagle, exchange his dogs again, and then head down to Tanana Crossing. Ben Downing, who held the contract from Dawson to Fort Gibbon, at least that section from Eagle to Circle City, there were some shelter cabins available. The carriers came to know just about everybody out on the trail, though they often passed on opposite sides of the river. The dogs were not necessarily a pleasant group. Harry saw Judge Wickersham often and Bishop Peter Rowe, and the bishop traveled with a simple two-dog team. Harry covered 4,000 miles a year with his team and gained a lot of experience. He used sleds from 8 to 14 feet long. Well, the mail paid regularly, and it did, though, cause Harry to lose his claims because he was unable to get enough time off to do the assessment work that was required. So he ended up for a while working at the trading post at Tanana Crossing and learned about trading furs with the local native people. In early winter, he hunted meat for the army at Fort Egbert. The army supplies of beef were wintered in downstream, so they got to eat a lot of moose and caribou that year. They were able to set up a camp on the divide between Mission Creek and the 40 Mile. Well, the men and animals suffered a lot in the winter cold, and with the changing of the season, with heat, mosquitoes, with the trail from with the army that the army was working on, which was going back to Valdez, was 420 miles long and took a little over a year to build.
Ready for a phone call?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Nick Nugent, and your name is?
Randy.
Hello, Randy.
I don't want to get too much off the subject from Harry, but all this talk of the dogs got me wondering, did they get all these dogs from the Eskimo people, or did they bring them up from the lower 48? Were the dogs they used back then bigger than the sled dogs, the steed dogs that they use now? Can you tell me a little bit about these
dogs? Well, there's a totally different type of dog, first of all.
Yeah, the main freight dog was the McKenzie River Malamute, which mostly averaged 125 pounds and could pull trees out of the ground practically. Big, strong dogs. The Husky, as we know it today, came much later, and Leonard Seppala helped develop that breed in the 1920s and 30s. So they did a lot of village dogs with other dogs they could mix in that were just big, hardy dogs.
Randy, thank you for the phone call, buddy. Take care.
Well, Harry did go out for a little bit to visit family in Chicago. He didn't stay very long. He just found out he didn't quite fit into Chicago anymore. After 6 months, he came back north, arrived in Valdez late August in 1903, looked up his former employer, Jim Fish, and was offered a job hauling mail from Valdez to Fort Gibbon by way of the new town of Fairbanks. Also hired on was Charles Mack McGonigal, who became a partner of Harry's for a while. On that day that he arrived in Valdez, something that affected Harry's later life, Dr. Cook started the first climb of his of Mount McKinley. So we'll get in the second half, we'll find out why that was important. His new partner, McGonigal, was one of the prospectors who just missed potential wealth. They went down the, McGonigal and partners had went down the river and were in a hurry. They went right by the mouth of the Klondike just a couple of days before news of the strike got out, which would have to be something that would haunt you all your life.
Yes.
During the winter of 1898, Mack spent 34 straight days outdoors when the temperature never rose above minus 50. So he was another pretty hardy character. He freighted to Dawson to smaller camps for a couple of years. He, though, went on to Nome and then eventually left there. They used horse-drawn wagons the first year over Thompson Pass, went on to Gakona, And then eventually they changed horses for dogs as winter set in. The Richardson at this time was not fully established. The maps were inaccurate. And they actually, from the Chistochina to Isabel Pass, they had three trails to choose from, which they ended up developing.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Alaska is new every season. Fall and winter bring new sporting opportunities for grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting, predator calling and trapping, snowshoeing, and winter camping. Gear up for success at Frontier Outfitters for traps, snares, and calls, guns, and ammunition. You'll stay warm and dry with the right clothing and rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. Just downstairs, you'll find ATV and snow machine accessories and Sentry Hardware. For every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
The Fairbanks Hearing and Ballot Center is proud to accept insurance from every major insurance provider in the state of Alaska, including TRICARE. They're also the in-network provider for most major insurances as well. Alaska law allows for insurance payments on hearing aids and devices only if prescribed by a licensed audiologist. And with the year's end approaching, now's the time to use those benefits before the deductible resets. Visit the certified audiologist and otolaryngologist at the Fairbanks Hearing and Ballot Center if you're suffering from hearing problems or loss. Find out more at fairbankshearing.com.
There's a new radio show echoing across the last frontier, Alaska Tracks. Alaska Tracks celebrates the heritage, landscapes, and deeply rooted traditions of life in Alaska. Hosted by wildlife biologist and lifelong outdoorsman Randy Zarkey, Alaska Tracks brings you firsthand stories from hunters, bush pilots, trappers, scientists, artists, and elders who know the land, live the lifestyle, and keep Alaska's legacy alive. Based on an oral history project by the Alaska Trappers Association, each episode is a bridge between generations, between bush and city, between past and future. Alaska Tracks isn't just a show. It's a living archive, a celebration, and a call to stay connected to Alaska's roots. Proudly presented by KFAR Radio and supported by sponsors who celebrate Alaska's story. Rod Saw Shop, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Frontier Outfitters. Alaska Tracks, Saturdays at 1:30 p.m., only on KFAR Radio.
KFAR Weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with highs around 2 above. Northerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, lows dip down to about 10 below. Partly cloudy tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 2 above. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 a.m., and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, David Pruse in the studio here with Nick Nugent. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. Well, at this time on this route they had that went up to Fort Gibbon through Fairbanks was probably one of the tougher routes you could get. From just about Paxson Lake north, you were out in wide open country, very little shelter. Going through the range was really hard. The water, you know, if you've been through the pass and seen how the river meanders from side to side. Harry actually went through the ice once during one of his trips, managed to not get swept under the ice. And as he was trying to decide what to do, which would be get dry, he realized his dogs could smell something, and he noticed the smell of wood smoke. Fortunately, he was only about a mile from a cabin. It was occupied, and he was able to get warmed up and live through the event. During this same time, Judge Wickersham arrived in Alaska. He had met Harry and Eagle during a suicide investigation, interestingly. He offered Harry a position as U.S. Deputy Marshal. Harry wasn't all that interested in that. Wickersham came to Fairbanks, as we know, after clearing up corruption in Nome, and developed an urge to climb Mount McKinley, which he made an attempt in 1903. Harry was earning a reputation at the same time as being the go-to man when transportation or a guide was needed. He led Bishop Rowe to Galkana, and the weather stretched the trip to 24 days, which usually took seven. They lived on snowshoe hares And Harry later proclaimed Roe was a prince of a fella to have for a companion. I imagine they got to know each other pretty well in that time. Well, one of Harry's passengers that he carried out was Fanny Hall, the dance hall queen. That turned out to be a very slow trip because every place she showed up, they were mobbed by people that wanted to see her and talk to her. Well, dog meshing wasn't simple. Harry lost two of his best leaders to fights within the team. The dogs were very quick at jumping each other. So nothing about it was the simplest job. Judge Wickersham had found some gold in the Kantishna country while he was on his trip up the mountain, and that got interest going, and eventually there was gold found on Eureka Creek. There were actually three discovery strikes made within about 2 days of each other in the Kantishna country. A lot of people had gone up there. Harry spent time there freighting and carrying mail. By February 1906, it was pretty well noted that the gold was going to run out there fairly quickly. By freeze-up, the truth was known, and Harry had quit the country late in the summer. Millionaire hunter Charles Sheldon arrived on the Seattle No. 3. He had heard a lot about it, decided he was working for the U.S. Biological Survey, collecting samples. He chose Harry to take him to the Kantishna country, as Harry would be probably the best guide and had good knowledge of the country. He was very taken with Harry, liked him a lot, Harry being very personable. They left Fairbanks for Kantishna on July 14th aboard a chartered steamer, the Dusty Diamond, and reached the abandoned town site of Roosevelt. 2 days later, they'd made it into Wonder Lake, where when the cloud cover lifted, Sheldon noted that all the other great mountains he had ever seen faded at the sight. It was a thing that he never forgot. Sheldon was an excellent person. He was a millionaire, but he was an excellent natured person. Got along well with people who weren't of his same class, which wasn't always common. He had become rich in 1902 on silver prospects. Well, while looking for sheep, he climbed the lower reaches of Mount McKinley to about 8,900 feet and found one of Wickersham's camps and a small supply cache left by Cook. He realized, watching, that the true potential to access the summit would be by the way of Harper and Muldrow glaciers. Well, he and Harry were close, and he eventually left the country. He is already planning a return trip with a much greater scope, and as he departed, he said his last comment was he felt though he was leaving a lifelong friend. That fall, in 1906, Harry and a new partner, Ed Bunch, were operating a freighting business. The spring of 1907, Carstens received a telegram from Sheldon asking him to prepare for a year-long expedition. Harry went to work at once, and he was so thorough that Sheldon had little to do after he arrived, no loose ends to tie up. They spent a month packing supplies, and their cabin had been seen by Sheldon the year before, and it was in a perfect place in the mountains for the game they were after. Sheldon spent a lot of October alone taking samples for the Biological Survey. Harry was keeping in touch just enough to assure his well-being and hauling the samples out for safekeeping. They trapped or hunted every animal they could find, carefully preserving their skins and skeletons for the museum. It seems kind of wasteful, but it was the pattern at that time.
Ready for a phone call?
Certainly.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Nick Nugent. Your name is?
Hi, Dave. This is Kaya.
Hello, Kaya. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I just called in to say that I have crashed through the Yukon River in Dawson with a team of 10 dogs, and I've lived to tell the tale.
I would not imagine that was any kind of a pleasant experience, huh?
No, it was not. I got lucky because I was going on a 40-mile trip to someone's cabin. I almost made it there, and right where they call it the 60-mile river, where it pours out into the Yukon, I had broken through the ice. There was some overflow. I went out with an axe to try to see if it was thick. It was okay. We went a little further, and all of a sudden, I went down. The sled went down. The 10 dogs went down. What stopped me was I was in water up to my breast, and I must have hit bottom on the shore somehow. I could feel the current. It was pretty strong, but I was able to get out. The dogs actually got out. They pulled the sled out, and I hung on to the sled, and they dragged me off to where they thought, I guess, it was firmer ground. There was a cabin about a mile away. I was able to undress at this guy's cabin and take all my clothes off and get a fire going and dry up. But oddly enough, I was warm, even being soaked, because I had so much clothes on. It was 30 below.
You had the layers, yeah.
Yeah, and I was warm until actually I got the fire going. But it was hard getting my clothes off. They had to beat my boots and my legs off.
The ice, yeah.
The ice just, I mean, you couldn't get to the laces. You couldn't get to anything. So, yeah.
Well, you had an instant vapor barrier.
Yeah,
Kaya,
sure.
Thank you for the phone call. We got to finish up here.
I'm sure you do. Okay, have a good one.
Thank you for the call. Bye.
Well, in November, meat hunters arrived, and Harry got back with their mushing supplies and dogs. Sheldon always praised Harry's ability with dogs, including his own personal dog, which as soon as Harry got back after 2 days, Sheldon's dog left, joined Harry, and never had anything to do with him again. But the thing to know is here, both men love the early mornings. They love the mountains. On many days, Sheldon be out tracking sheep for up to 12 hours. The interruption of the market hunters was pretty loathsome to Sheldon, and he started to put this idea together that he would like to see some type of a ban on commercial hunting in an area here, like they did in Yellowstone. And he also started to develop this first idea of Denali becoming a national park. In mid-December, they took their last look around and headed back to Fairbanks. On June 11th, 1908, Sheldon finally left, and in Fairbanks, he was planning an autumn trip to the Koyukuk with Harry when rather dire financial news, some of those depressions we talked about, forced his return to New York. He left more determined than ever to use his connections to create a wilderness or national park. But now he had a new resolve, which we'll really see come to pass in our second part in a month or so. He was absolutely resolved to see that Harry would become the first superintendent of whatever national park were made in Alaska.
There you go. Got about a minute left.
Again, I think it shows that although Harry came from kind of hard times, he apparently was the kind of person that just exuded confidence in those around him, even when things weren't going well. And people saw the abilities and leadership. It wasn't just some guy out on the trail. Some very, very influential people helped to get Harry to become the first superintendent of Denali National Park. And we'll tell that rather involved story in January.
There you go. Well, thank you for part one of maybe three. exceptional individual, but, you know, at the turn of the century, of the last century, there were so many that came through and stayed and did so much.
There really were. We've talked about a lot of them on this program, and it seems like every time we go, wow, you couldn't do much more than that. Two or three guys later, we'll find out, well, yeah, you could.
Fairbanks, you have a great day. Nick, thank you very much. We'll see you in December. You have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I will see you all on Friday. I have Liv Rodriguez in the radio booth with me on Friday. And we'll see you then. Thank you.